We are back on the Bengals Beat podcast. I'm Lindsay Patterson, Tyler Dragon, Charlie Goldsmith. How you guys doing?
Doing pretty good. It's NFL draft week. The weather's good outside. You know, NFL season's it's creeping around the corner, but this is an exciting week because of the NFL draft. It's one of my favorite times of year. And so everything is good on my end. How about you too?
It's funny. I think of the NFL draft as the end of the old season, not the start of the new season creeping around the corner. I love the draft as well, though. It's one of my favorite times of the year.
It is the best time. It almost feels like Christmas week in the NFL world. And I'm just really excited that we can finally talk about players in a couple days. And we'll get to all that in just a moment locally with the Cincinnati Bengals picking at number 5. Some of the draft storylines that we're really hearing this week have just been a head scratcher for me, because obviously the Bengals don't need to worry about a quarterback in the 2021 draft. But this Mac Jones love, Justin Fields just dropping in the draft. I don't understand what the Niners are going to do at 3. What's going on right now in the quarterback room?
I've said it on Twitter. I've said it multiple times. If I were the 49ers, I would draft Justin Fields. Now, and that's assuming that the Jets draft Zach Wilson and obviously the Jaguars go with Trevor Lawrence. Now, I strongly believe that Justin Fields is the best quarterback prospect in this year's draft. Now, there are some people that are saying, you know, it could be a smokescreen and the 49ers could be drafting Justin Fields. I was on USA Today's mock draft yesterday, and the writer who picked for the 49ers said the 49ers were going to draft Justin Fields. Now, I disagree. I think everybody and, you know, the trend is moving towards Mac Jones for the 49ers. I do believe Mac Jones – I think he's a fringe first-round talent, honestly. I would think if I were a GM and I was grading players, I would have him in the second round as far as the quarterbacks. And that's not a knock on him. He had a great college season. But when you look at that Alabama team, they were stacked. He was throwing to arguably the two best receivers in college football. He had the best running back in college football in Najee Harris and the best offensive line in college football, not to mention, Nick Saban coaching that defense. So he had a lot of help around. He was surrounded by pretty much an all-star team, and that's why they won the national championship. He is a good player, but I don't think he's a better quarterback prospect than Justin Fields and Zach Wilson. Zach Wilson's going probably second, and Justin Fields, it's going to be real interesting where he ends up. If I'm the New England Patriots, I'm trying to trade up to get him, because I can see Justin Fields sitting behind Cam Newton for a year and then taking the reins at quarterback and really being the next good quarterback in New England.
What's so strange to me is how we obviously place a premium on quarterbacks. And for example, the San Francisco 49ers traded everything that they did to get up to number 3 and all of the other different moves like that. Yet we see Justin Fields, one of the better quarterback prospects in this draft, slipping so much. I do think that Justin Fields is better than quarterbacks who will be taken before him. But it's also interesting to consider the supply and demand of quarterback in the NFL. You can look at the Broncos at 9, the Patriots at 15, maybe the Eagles at 12, maybe Washington at 19. But aside from those areas in the top 20, either everyone feels like they have a guy or everyone has enough confidence in who they have to where they're not going to go out and invest a premium first round pick in a quarterback, which is unbelievable to me, considering, again, how much of a premium there are for great quarterbacks in the NFL. Why don't we see teams making more shots or taking more shots at quarterbacks? Why don't we see teams being more aggressive to take Justin Fields, who probably should be a top 10 pick in any draft, not just a draft, or including a draft like this, where you have maybe 4 quarterbacks who could go in the top 10? Why doesn't someone do something even more aggressive to go out and get one of the, I guess, top 2 tier-ish quarterback prospects you'll see over any draft? He's not in the same class as like a Joe Burrow or Trevor Lawrence, but he's right there in the tier below of the kinds of quarterbacks who have come out over the last several years. And the fact that I guess people are ignoring that and someone's going to get him at a much later pick than he should go is surprising to me.
Yeah, I think any team in the top 10 or even 15, they're going to be pretty happy to see Justin Fields slip. Another team right now making the news over the last couple of days, the Falcons. They're at the number 4 spot. And I know a lot of mock drafts have them taking Kyle Pitts. I don't see them going offensive lineman. There were also a little bit of a smoke screen yesterday, reports that teams are calling about Julio Jones. I honestly feel like that's every offseason that Atlanta gets that phone call. I don't see them moving out of the 4 spot, and I see the Bengals staying at 5. Duke Tobin's talked about it. Zach Taylor's talked about it. They feel like they can get their guy at 5, and they don't even really want to mess with moving. But if Atlanta moves, what does that mean for Cincinnati? Could you see anything could happen on draft night, or do you just see them staying at 5?
Well, I was joking with my friend Orlando Ledbetter on Twitter yesterday, and he covers the Falcons for Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And he pretty much said the Falcons are targeting Kyle Pitts, Penei Sewell, and Justin Fields with that 4 pick, or they can trade down. I don't believe they're going to trade down. If they do, it's obviously going to be for a team that wants a quarterback and believes that their quarterback is there at number 4. I think Matt Ryan still has some juice left in the tank. So I believe the Falcons to build more around him and build more pieces. Like you said, Lindsay, I don't see Julio leaving Atlanta anytime soon, or if ever. And I think the Falcons are going to build pieces around Matt Ryan and Julio Jones in that offense. And what better player than Kyle Pitts? You can plug him in to that offense, Julio, Matt Ryan, Ridley, and Kyle Pitts. That would be a dynamic offense in Atlanta. And they would be in contention in their division, the NFC South, with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So that's where I see it happening. I don't see them trading down, but you never know. I've said before that the draft really starts at number 4. The top 3 teams, we already know that they are going to draft quarterbacks. Number 4, Atlanta, that's the question mark right there, and that's where the draft begins. Do they go quarterback and shock us all? Do they pick a player like Justin Fields? Do they trade down to a team maybe like the Denver Broncos who want a quarterback? Or do the Patriots trade all the way up? So it's really intriguing, and I can't wait to Thursday night because it's going to be interesting to see if there are more first-round trades that are going to happen.
We do disagree about where the Falcons are going. This was a team that earned a higher pick than the Cincinnati Bengals this season and has a number of players like Matt Ryan and Julio Jones that they are counting on that aren't in the same stage of their careers that they were when the Falcons were contending. It's funny. I was just thinking about this. The Falcons kind of remind me of like a 2017, 2018 Bengals in that they still have a good amount of quality players, specifically skill position players, but have significantly more glaring flaws that they weren't able to keep bolstered up from their window of contention. Falcons obviously were in the Super Bowl a few years ago. Bengals, we remember when they were in the playoffs as consistently as they were. Neither team was able to keep up that depth and core and maintain that well-rounded nature that you need to be a playoff team in the NFL. So the question is, do you draft a quarterback and start the rebuild now on a team that might be going on a little bit of a decline? A team that doesn't have a ton of super young pieces to build around. Do you go all in on that rebuild and trade some of the guys that Tyler mentioned, or do you kind of do some patchwork to the offense now and hope that a good draft can bolt Atlanta forward? But man, in that division with Tampa Bay and New Orleans, that's just incredibly tough for me. Those are two of the most well-rounded rosters in the NFL to me, even though New Orleans specifically will have some more questions this year. But again, those are two of the most well-rounded rosters in the NFL, and Atlanta just can't say the same thing.
Yeah, I think 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and now 6 with Miami. Miami has the perfect position because I still think Penei Sewell will be there for them at 6 to take. They obviously made a trade today to the Washington football team. They need to add to their offensive line. It wasn't that great last year, too. A lot of youth when it comes to the Miami Dolphins. But the Cincinnati Bengals, again, we've talked about this pretty much since the Bengals beat the Houston Texans last season. A lot of people were on the Sewell talk. That's, you know, they were they thought the Bengals would be out of position to draft him. And now we're a few days away and it feels all but official. When we've heard from Zach Taylor, we've heard from Duke Tobin. Obviously, none of the guys are telling us this is who the Cincinnati Bengals are going to take at five. But when you put the puzzle pieces together from free agency of not addressing the wide receiver position and looking and listening to what they are saying, they're talking about an impact player from day one, a starter, premier player who can help this team win. Not saying Penesol can't do that because their offensive line obviously still needs help. But does it feel like it's all but official for Ja'Marr Chase in Cincinnati?
Well, you're on the right track, Lindsay. By now, I feel like I sound like a broken record.
I know. I just need to be official now, really.
I do think the Bengals are going to pick Ja'Marr Chase. The Bengals run 11 personnel more than any team in the NFL. That's three wide receiver sets with one running back and one tight end. The Bengals didn't fill the void left by AJ Green in free agency. Could Auden Tate be an outside receiver in Zach Taylor's offense? Maybe if he can stay healthy. But I believe the Bengals think that Ja'Marr Chase is a can't miss wide receiver talent who will be there for the taking at five. Now, is wide receiver the biggest area of need? No, absolutely not. I can't be more clear on that. I've said numerous times that if I were the Bengals GM, I would draft Penei Sewell at five and bolster that offensive line. Offensive line is their biggest position of weakness on the offensive end. However, I just think that what I'm hearing out of the organization, smoke signals is the term I used last week, that they are targeting Ja'Marr Chase with that number five overall pick. And, you know, Duke Tobin has said that he believes this year's draft class is deep at offensive line. And the Bengals think that they can get a starting caliber offensive lineman in the second round. Will that offensive lineman be on the caliber of Penei Sewell or Rashawn Slater? No, I don't think so at all. But that is a gamble that the team is willing to take from what we're all hearing right now.
So the one area I've kind of turned on this is, while again, I even think Sewell is a better prospect than Ja'Marr Chase, you can really make the argument that what Ja'Marr Chase could do for the offense this year is more valuable than what Penei Sewell could do for the Bengals offense this year. As important as offensive line is, specifically from a Bengals perspective and the lack of investment in guards, the upgrade, even if you do play Penei Sewell at tackle, say the upgrade over, you know, Sewell going to left tackle and Reef and Williams going to right and Reef going to guard, or that whole mess that we would then spend the next 2 months debating if they took Sewell, that's a less clear upgrade over the offensive line they have now than Ja'Marr Chase is a clear upgrade over the wide receiving core they have now. Ja'Marr Chase gives them a number one receiver, honestly, more than Penei Sewell this year gives them a number one offensive lineman. Penei Sewell's a great tackle of the future. We'd see how he'd be used this year if the Bengals selected him. But it's up for debate. It's a matter of opinion, where you move him, how he fits on a offensive line that does have a number of veterans who have played certain positions for a while. Ja'Marr Chase, there's no debate. It's incredibly clear where and how he fits, and the production that you would expect is obvious and almost kind of, there are no locks in the draft, but it seems like even a lot of a sure thing almost, the fact that if Ja'Marr Chase stays healthy, he'd be incredibly productive in the Bengals offense.
So wait, Charlie, are you switching your pick? You would pick Ja'Marr Chase if you were the Bengals GM? Is that what I hear you going towards?
Here's what I'm saying. Ja'Marr Chase helps them win more this year than Penei Sewell does. Penei Sewell helps them win more in the future than Ja'Marr Chase does. Because I still do believe that offensive tackle of the future is the most important thing. But if really by drafting Sewell, you're just kind of making a minor upgrade at tackle and a minor upgrade at guard this year over what you have, since Sewell it will be a 20-year-old rookie, I do think that you can have higher expectations and a higher floor for what Ja'Marr Chase can do for the Bengals this year. And for a coaching staff and a front office that just absolutely needs to win now, it's a win now move.
Yeah, are the Bengals going to win now?
No. Well, no. But this gives them a better chance to do so. We did the over and under a couple podcasts ago. 7-10, and Zach Taylor stays is my prediction. That hasn't changed. But we've said since they drafted Joe Burrow that the path to contention is an incredible dynamic offense. That's kind of the quickest win now, get rich quick thing you can do in the NFL. And the Bengals can make a bigger jump right now and maybe sacrifice their offensive line down the road, but they can make a bigger jump right now by taking a wide receiver.
That's a dangerous game to play. I will say that. Go ahead, Lindsay.
I do. I mean, I agree with what Charlie's saying. I think that this team, and just talking to Peter King about it, someone who has talked to GMs, he talks to GMs every day. He even told me yesterday that GMs understand why the Cincinnati Bengals would want to take Ja'Marr Chase over Penei Sewell, because, and I put it out on Twitter, when you look at the tiers in the position, I know a lot of people, the argument was for a couple months, you can get a wide receiver in the second round and just get Penei, you know, because you need a better offensive line. You need someone who can come in. As you guys have mentioned, obviously it's a future pick and solidify the offensive line, but there's such a drop off. GMs around the league all agree there's a drop off when it comes to the wide receivers in the second. Some of the wide receivers that Bengals fans even want in the second round would be a reach on most draft boards because they're tier three wide receivers. Obviously, Ja'Marr Chase is probably the best. I'll say the best in the wide receiver room when it comes to prospects. I think at the moment, the Bengals, obviously, Riley Reiff is not the long-term answer at right tackle. They might just get a year, maybe two from him. I think then you start to look at the guard position. And then if you draft a tackle or a guard in the second or third round, which they could double up on that because of the depth in the offensive line, who could start on day one and transition that tackle to a guard, that's all possible. But if you get Penei Sewell, you put him out there at tackle, then you're playing the musical chairs game. You got Jonah Williams in center. It's not a bad thing at all. I just feel like the Cincinnati Bengals, they feel comfortable with their tackle positions just this season, not long-term. And they're going to worry about that in the second and third round because they feel like those starters are still available. And it's just not as bad of a drop off as it is when it comes to the wide receiver game. That was a lot of rambling, but I'll just say that I think the drop off is far more when it comes to the wide receiver than the offensive line.
Yeah. And I do agree with you there. You know, when it comes to receiver, those top three players, Ja'Marr Chase, Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, those are the clear-cut best wide receivers in the draft. And the drop-off after a player like Waddle, it's clear, it's drastic. Now, when I look at the offensive lineman prospects in this year's draft, there's a belief that players like offensive lineman Alex Leatherwood could be available in the second round. Maybe Texas tackle Samuel Cosmi could be available in the second round. Now, those players, there is a drop-off between those players and Penei Sewell, Rashad Slater, Christian Darrisaw, but it's not as drastic. But there is a drop-off.
Here's where I'm at. If you take Ja'Marr Chase in the first round, though, you absolutely have to take someone in the second round as an offensive lineman who can contribute right away. It has to be someone who can play guard. For example, as much as I love, I don't know, Sam Cosmi or Jalen Mayfield, I don't think either of them would be as good guards right now as Liam Eichenberg or Alex Leatherwood. I do have Eichenberg above Leatherwood. I think he's a better guard now and can be a better tackle later. It's that kind of player, though, that the Bengals need to go out and target in the second. Jackson Carmen's another name like that I like. And then in the third, I do think because of the depth in this class, you'll be able to get a tackle of the future, whether that's Mayfield or Walker Little or Dylan Reddins, someone like that. They'll have options. It's just still important that you, again, put the best, or I think it's important for them to put the best team out there that they can in 2021. And having someone in the second round who can play guard is a big part of that.
And I also think that people think just drafting a tackle and moving him into guard is just an easy transition for an offensive lineman. That's an adjustment. Obviously, you want him to play if you're going to get somebody in the second or third round to start on day one to add to the guard position, or you move the offensive line around a little bit. I even heard Dave Lapham say the other day that he could see Jonah Williams. And this is, look, I haven't heard this one yet because we've talked about Jonah as a guard. He said even Jonah Williams taking reps at center right now. That would be something that he could see. So there's so many possibilities. I just think that it's an easy answer to say, draft a tackle in the second or third round, just move them into guard. Yes, that's going to be a transition. You could say the same thing for Rasul or Rashawn Slater. That's going to be a little bit difficult, even if those guys can play multiple positions on the offensive line. That's going to take some getting used to. So I think that it's easy to point out, you know, the tackle of the future, as you guys mentioned, maybe the third round. I think day two and day three is when things really get interesting for this offensive line and what the Bengals plan on doing for the future, because that's when I think they go back to back, because they do believe in the depth.
Yeah, I have them going back-to-back offensive linemen in my mock draft. So it's going to be really interesting to see what the Bengals do. This year's draft class is believed to be deep along the offensive line. I do agree with Charlie that, you know, in the second and third round, they should address the interior of the O-line if they do indeed draft Ja'Marr Chase. That's why I have a player like Alex Leatherwood being selected in the second round. He has played guard at Alabama, and he was a good guard at Alabama when he was an underclassman before he moved to tackle, which he was probably the best tackle in college football last year. So if he's available in the second round, that's the player I would take, but you know, we'll see. That's why they're going to have the NFL draft on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
The thing that I really keep going back and forth on, I did my mock draft, is do the Bengals, or should the Bengals, take a pure guard? There are three potential pure guards who I think would be available to the Bengals in the mid rounds that I really like: Trey Smith, Josh Myers, Wyatt Davis. I think that all three of them, again, have guard experience, will be starting guards in the NFL, but how valuable is the opportunity and the ability to swing the tackle? It's kind of like taking an extra swing and almost getting an extra pick. If you draft a guy earlier, like Liam Eichenberger, Jackson Carman, who can later move out to tackle, because then you're kind of getting two players. If you draft a guard, you might be getting a better guard now, but that's someone whose positional flexibility will be limited down the road. If they wait till the fourth for a pure guard, I like a guy like Robert Hainsey. He kind of does some of those same things in terms of being able to rotate between guard and tackle. That's if they want to address defense in round three. But the consensus between us seems to be that offense, with maybe a few defensive picks sprinkled in. But it sounds like the consensus with us is offense is the real priority.
And I think one of the things, obviously, everybody wanted Jim Turner gone after last season, and the Frank Pollock hire was huge. And Zach Taylor just mentioned it in his press day this week that Frank spent a lot of the pro days. And I think that's one thing that we don't talk about enough, is what Frank Pollock will be able to do.
Yeah, he's I don't want to be on the bashing Jim Turner train that everybody's on, but I do believe that Frank Pollock is a better offensive line coach. He's widely regarded around the NFL, had a tremendous amount of success in Dallas. He runs a wide zone blocking scheme, and Ezekiel Elliott has success with that. I think Joe Mixon has already had success with that when Frank Pollock was in Cincinnati, and he's probably going to have some more success this year if he can stay healthy in that offensive line. They'll reap the benefits of Frank Pollock's coaching.
So this is something I guess we'll probably save for podcasts in May, June, and July, but one of the biggest unanswered questions for me is, while there will be added wide zone elements, how much of a noticeable difference does that make? One of the biggest areas it could make a difference is the type of offensive lineman they draft on in the second and third days of the draft this season. The wide zone scheme is so dependent on offensive linemen who are mobile and can get to the second level. That's crucial, and I can't stress that enough. So because Frank Pollock is the wide zone guy, the wide zone guru, I feel, you know, I'm more interested in prospects like Wyatt Davis and Josh Myers than I am, say, Deonte Brown from a Bengals perspective. There are types of offensive linemen who fit wide zone concepts. And I think that with Frank Pollock, and if the Bengals address and act on the wide zone elements that they've been discussing, that'll really show up for the first time on draft night.
You guys, we're 2 days away from this being real, and we can actually talk about the number five pick, because the Bengals are going to stay at number five, and we all kind of feel like that it's leaning towards Ja'Marr Chase. But I know there's plenty on Cincinnati.com, but first we'll go ahead and get to the questions of the week, Tyler.
So you're saying the Bengals are going to trade down, Lindsay? Is that what you're saying? You're confirming this?
Look, if something wild happened on draft night, I feel pretty confident. If there was a percentage on it, I would say 85% the Bengals stay at five.
So now I've added to the questions of the week. So now I have three questions. And my first question pertains along these lines. If a team in, say, who is drafting the 10 through 15 range, requested a trade and proposed a trade to the Bengals, the trade that, you know, number, okay, let's say the Dallas Cowboys, they have the number 10 pick. So they propose a trade to the Bengals, the number 10 pick and next year's first round pick for the number five pick. Would you do it?
I would, but I don't think the Bengals would, because this is just by reading the tea leaves. The word premier players has been discussed in forward facing press conferences and private conversations so many times during this pre-draft process that I don't see the Bengals going lower than eight. Is just my read on the situation. Now, would I do it? Considering that I would take Penei Sewell anyway, and that I don't see a huge difference between Penei Sewell and Rashawn Slater, yes, I would do it personally, but I'm not sure that aligns with what the Bengals have been telling us.
And I agree with Charlie. Just talking to people around the league, everyone has really kind of come to the Bengals aren't going to leave that number five spot. Look, they're going to listen to the phone conversations more than they did last year with Joe Burrow. They were not answering the phone. I'm just paraphrasing there. There's no way they were going to move out of the number one spot. They were going to get Joe Burrow. But I think with number five, they just feel like their guy's there. They don't want to mess it up. Anybody could trade up above them if they trade down. So they're going to stay put. And I probably would, because this team obviously has a lot of holes still, and it would be nice to just get a whole bunch of picks for the future, but I would, but they won't. Yeah, I would, but they won't.
I thought Lindsay was not going to answer that question. You took a long time to answer that question.
I know. I do every single time. But I think Charlie answered it perfectly. When you think about it, yeah, I probably would if I was the GM, but they're going to stay where they're at. We know that.
Okay. I tend to agree with both of you. So now back to my original questions of the week. If you had the number one overall pick in the draft and all players were eligible in the NFL, who would you pick number one?
Now, are we incorporating contracts into this? So is Patrick Mahomes making $1 billion like he is?
All players are eligible, free agents, not under contract.
So you're on your current contract.
No player has a contract.
So you're on the rookie scale contract.
Yes.
I mean, it's Patrick Mahomes, right? I mean, that's
okay. I mean, that would be my answer, but I don't know where you guys are going. I would pick Patrick Mahomes.
I think
now if we were doing the thing where you're on your current contract, I think that Joe Burrow and Trevor Lawrence have a very interesting case, but that's a different conversation.
Because Trevor Lawrence and Joe Burrow are going to make more on their endorsement deals for their whole rookie contract than they are during their rookie contract. But I think it's a landslide when you think of the best quarterback in the NFL right now, and that would be Patrick Mahomes with the resume. Okay.
I think that was too easy of a question, so I'm going to ask a harder question. If you got to draft a quarterback between Joe Burrow, Trevor Lawrence, or Justin Herbert, who would you draft? I'm putting you guys on the spot, and Twitter is going to be on fire.
It's still difficult. You cannot make – I cannot
– So you have to say
– I just – at the moment, I need to see – obviously, Trevor Lawrence is going to be great in the NFL. Justin Herbert had himself a rookie of the year. If Joe Burrow would have stayed healthy, I feel like there was a little bit of more of an argument between the two. Well, it looks like, is Patrick Mahomes still available?
Which one of the three, Lindsay?
Can you just, you know, add a bonus in there? Can I just get 1 year of watching Trevor Lawrence?
Nope.
I pass.
Yeah, I haven't won.
Are you kidding me? You just passed?
I can't answer this question with knowledge of the three quarterbacks right now. I want three full, besides Justin Herbert's rookie of the year, but I want to see Joe Burrow fully healthy, 1 year in the NFL. I want to see Trevor Lawrence 1 year in the NFL. So this conversation, if Joe Burrow can stay healthy.
You saw 10 games of Joe Burrow.
It can happen at the end of the 2021 season. So we'll be in January 2022. We can have this conversation. So I will write this down as a calendar reminder. January 2022 is when this conversation can be legit.
I cannot believe you are passing.
You can't answer it.
I think you can. I mean, it's a hypothetical question.
I will say this, that
please answer.
I haven't watched enough tape on either. And there are great podcasts out there from a national perspective with people who are probably doing a better job watching every single game Trevor Lawrence played and every single game Justin Herbert played, and have a more well-rounded perspective on these three quarterbacks. So I will also pass.
I like that.
Oh my goodness.
I just haven't done my homework.
I'm talking with Austin Gale today, PFF, one of my favorites over there. And I will bring this question up to him. I'll put him on the spot. He studies tapes. He looks at all three quarterbacks, and I will make him choose, just hypothetically.
I cannot believe you guys are both passing. You saw tape of Trevor Lawrence, so you can use his college tape.
It's not the same. It's not the
same. And then you saw college tape of Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert, and you saw NFL tape of those two, and you still can't pick a quarterback. Wow. I'm disappointed in you too.
I need a full season. I need a full season in the NFL.
That concludes my questions of the week. I'm just still disappointed. I'm not even gonna ask the other question.
That was a tough one. That was bigger than Cleveland last week being a top city in Ohio.
I'm done.
Well, good news is we'll actually have official players to talk about who are done with college, going into the NFL in two more days. We'll have plenty on Cincinnati.com. I know you guys are killing it over there. What's up there right now?
So I have a story on Zach Taylor's press conference that he had on Monday. USA Today Network, we all did a mock draft of the first round yesterday. That story's also on Cincinnati.com, plus a video I picked for the Bengals and the Chargers. I also have my own mock draft that's on Cincinnati.com right now. You have to have a subscription, though, to read that story. And later this week, I'll have a piece on possible late-round picks for the Bengals, late-round steals, rather. And later this week, an evergreen piece on the top five picks in Bengals history.
I hope you can get a chance to look at the day two draft guide I put out last week. About 24 in-depth breakdowns, scouting reports, intel on all the wide receivers and offensive linemen the Bengals could take on round two based on whether they take Chase or Sewell.
And I wanted to get a national look, so go check out my interviews with Duke Manny Weatherfield, Yates, and then Peter King on the Bengals Beat Podcast Extra. We'll have plenty in the next couple of days when it comes to recaps, videos, and podcasts. Thank you for listening to the Bengals Beat Podcast. We are back on Cincinnati.com. Everybody knows a big week in the NFL. The Cincinnati Bengals pick number 5. I had to bring in one of the experts. Peter King, you'll see him over on NBC Sports. How you doing?
I'm okay, Lindsay. How about you? It is a big week. Big week for the Bengals. Big week for a lot of teams.
And I'm going to start with another team right now. The team that's picking ahead of the Cincinnati Bengals, the Atlanta Falcons. Are they going to stay at 4?
I think they probably will stay at 4 for a very simple reason. You don't have right now the ability to make the sort of lucrative trade like Miami made, trading down from 3 to 12 with San Francisco, getting two future ones and a future 3. And most of that is because, you know, the 49ers were desperate and they wanted to make sure they were in position to get the quarterback they wanted. And I just don't see Denver or New England or, say, Washington or Chicago trading up and really giving a ransom to move up to get one of those quarterbacks.
The Cincinnati Bengals, if you are paying attention on social media right now, it's a fan base that's split right down the middle. Penei Sewell or Team Chase and Ja'Marr Chase, what should the Cincinnati Bengals do at number 5?
I think either pick would be fine and very understandable. a week ago, I was very much in the just take Penei Sewell camp. Just do it. But I've had, you know, after talking to a lot of people around the league, this is because I've asked a bunch of people whose opinions I really admire. I've asked a bunch of people what they think about the Bengals situation. And so as one general manager said, he said, look, I don't think you can go wrong with taking Chase or Sewell, but, and I adopted this. He said, the reason I would take Chase is because early in the second round where the Bengals pick at number 38, you can get a starting NFL tackle. And, you know, he brought up Liam Eichenberg, the tackle from Notre Dame. And I think it's clear that they probably wouldn't just stop there. But there will be some good guards available early in the third round. And one that may be available is Wyatt Davis from Ohio State. But I guess the feeling that I have, Lindsay, is that the difference between, you know, Jamar Chase and those second tier receivers is bigger than the difference between Penei Sewell and, let's say, the second tier tackles. Now, time may prove me wrong on that. We'll see.
With Jamar Chase, what makes him so special?
I think he's an extremely competitive player. He is not necessarily Tyreek Hill fast, but what he is he's exceedingly productive. And he's got great instincts about the position. He's great at getting open. And look, everybody saw the last time he played with Joe Burrow. You know, it was just basically a dream come true for Jamar Chase. And so I think his instincts are good. His route running is fantastic. He made beautiful music with Joe Burrow once. There's no reason to think he can't do it again.
When people look at the wide receiver room, we're hearing a lot. They have T. Higgins. They have Tyler Boyd. Why do they need to add another wide receiver? What would you say to that crowd?
I think it's an excellent point. I think their receivers are good right now. But because probably 70% of your snaps right now in the NFL are played with three receivers or more on the field, it's not a league anymore where you play two receivers, you know, 65% of the time. Most of the time, the majority of the time, you're going to have three receivers on the field, or say two receivers and two tight ends. So that's why I think having another receiver that you can't anymore just say, well, we got two good ones, that's enough.
Do you feel like Tyler Boyd gets enough credit in the NFL?
No, absolutely not. I think Tyler Boyd's great. I think he's, he is vastly underrated. And I mean, wherever, I forget where he was picked, in the 50s, maybe, in 2016, I forget, 40s. But, you know, the fact is, you know, the highest picked receivers in recent years are Tyler Boyd, John Ross, and T. Higgins. And there's no doubt in my mind that, you know, Tyler Boyd is as impactful as either of the other two. He's certainly more impactful than John Ross, but he's as impactful over the long term, I believe, as T. Higgins is going to be.
With Joe Burrow, obviously his rookie year was cut short. What did you make of those 10 games you got to see from him?
I think if he had finished the season, my gut feeling is he probably would have won Rookie of the Year. I think he would have been marginally better than Justin Herbert. He showed everything you want to see out of your rookie quarterback. He showed like he belonged. He could take a lot of hits and keep going. I mean, he got so beat up in that game against Philadelphia, and he just kept coming back. And you know, I see, that's one of the reasons, Lindsay, why I think I would totally understand if they take Penei Sewell, you know, because clearly the most important thing right now is protecting your quarterback. and making sure he doesn't have another devastating knee injury like he had in Washington last year. But I do think that, you know, part of what makes him so good is his mental approach to the game. He is really cold-blooded and tough. And Lindsay, I'm extremely bullish on his career. I think he's going to be really good for a long time.
Recently, he did an interview with Chris Collinsworth and he praised Zach Taylor. And he's really done that since day one when he talks about the relationship he has with the head coach. Obviously, Zach Taylor hasn't won enough games in Cincinnati, but does that mean something when you hear Burrow speak up? And what do you think of the sample size of this couple of seasons that you've seen from Zach Taylor?
Well, I mean, you know, I think in many ways he's fortunate to be in Cincinnati because, you know, Mike Brown has been there, done that with coaches. If he thinks his coach is the right guy for the job, even if his record is awful, he's going to keep him. So, but I think this is an important year, especially if Burrow plays, let's say, 14 games. Might play 17, I don't know. But if Burrow plays the vast majority of the season, the Bengals definitely need to play better, or else who knows? I don't know whether he'll survive. But I think one of the things that the team likes about Zach Taylor is that he's thoughtful. He's a very good teacher, not only of offense, but he puts all of his coaches in a good teaching position. So, you know, I've heard a lot of good things from people who are in that locker room, on that team, agents of those guys. And I really think that they are a healthy Burrow season from being a competitive team in that division.
Do you think they'll win a playoff game under Joe Burrow's rookie contract?
I would say yes, if he plays 5 years. Yes, I would say they would. Now, going farther than winning one playoff game, I probably wouldn't commit to doing that. But I do believe that Joe Burrow, as long as he has the sort of that they can continue to build around him and not give away the Geno Atkinses for nothing and AJ Greens. You know, they need to get, when you've got a great player and you're about to get rid of them, you can't, the Bengals wait a year too long, way too often. You've got to trade these guys before you end up giving them away.
Where are you putting the Bengals in the AFC North in 2021?
Let's see what happens with Burrow's recovery and his rehab. I'm probably going to put them fourth because it, assuming that Roethlisberger is ready to go at the start of this season, is in good shape, looks good in training camp, I still think the Steelers are better than the Bengals. But look, on a given day in this division, with a healthy Burrow, the Bengals can beat any team in the division. I just need to see them do it first before I think they're going to beat any of the teams in their division.
One last question before I wrap you up right now. You've been on the Bengals beat in the past, and I make you answer this every time I interview you. Give me a Bengals story that not a lot of people know, but it's an interesting story to you.
Well, I would say that one of the interesting things about covering the Bengals in 1984, which is the only year I covered them, that was Sam Weich's rookie year, Boomer Esiason's rookie year, was I had a room in a dormitory at Wilmington College where they had training camp. And there was only, it was either only one or two phones in the entire dorm. And so when 70 players or however many players who were at training camp were done with meetings for the evening and they all wanted to call their wives or girlfriends, whatever. There were no cell phones in those days. Guys didn't have phones in their dorms, in their rooms. Chris Collinsworth and and Boomer several nights would come by and sort of crane their head into my room, and I'd take a walk and I'd let him use my phone. So I remember that quite a bit. But my best memory of those days is how great it was to cover football, because I was in the dormitory with the players and I went to every practice that summer. And most of the practices were two-a-days with Paul Brown almost every day watching part or an entire practice. And I remember saying to Sam Weich one day about how great that was. And he goes, well, he goes, you know, to me working for Paul Brown, you know, you'd be crazy. It'd be like living next to a library and never checking out any of the books. So he said, I do the same thing. I see Paul Brown and sometimes I just want to stop and have a conversation with him. So that was, you talk about a way to get great education. Being on that beat for a year was fantastic.
As always, Peter King, one of the best in the NFL. What could fans check out to get ready for the NFL draft?
Well, you could read my mock draft at Football Morning in America and my column at NBCSports.com this week. But I don't know that you're going to get any clues about what the Bengals are going to do, because I've just told you, I don't know. But I think Ja'Marr Chase or Penei Sewell both would be good picks for them.
To be determined. Thank you, as always, for joining us over on the Cincinnati Inquirer.
Okay, thank you, Lindsay. Have a great week.